Welcome to Talk Back Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson. 891 ABC Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Good morning and welcome to the Easter long weekend edition of Saturday Talk Back Gardening. Good morning, Sophie.
Good morning, Deb, and good morning, listeners.
And you have got some time to work on Shingleback Farm and you've got a couple of plots of lawn. Reckon you might have a few questions for our guest in a moment, Stefan Palm.
Absolutely, absolutely, because, you know, as we said before, the key to having a good-looking lawn in winter is definitely what we do in autumn.
Okay, so if you've got a turf question, now is the time to call on 1300 222 891. Later in the program, I'll give away a couple of ABC Gardening Australia magazines. The phone line again, 1300 222 891, but we'd love your text comments on 0467 922 891. It's a very busy weekend for Stefan Palm. Lots of people want his expertise and he is lending us a few minutes this morning. Stefan Palm, Turf Consultant, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Good morning.
Great to have you with us. Now, I'm going to pass straight over to Sophie, who has got a stack of questions for you.
Morning, Stefan.
Good morning, Sophie.
The thing that often happens is we get to sort of July and people go, oh, my lawn looks yellow and daggy and what can I do? And then it's too late. So what should we be doing now to make sure our lawns look great through winter?
Yeah, you're dead right. And the reason for that is, of course, because as the soil temperatures cool down, the lawn slows down, goes into dormancy and says, I don't really mind what you do to me now in winter. I'm not doing anything in return for you. So, yes, the challenge is right now, and a lot of it has to do with how you feed it, what you feed it with, but also how you maintain it. So things that you do now are important as well. So,
absolutely. Sorry, Stefan. So if we talk about feeding first, right?
Yes.
So bear in mind, most of the lawns we grow in South Australia are Cooch, Kikuyu or Buffalo. Not always, but, you know, they are summer, warm weather, active grasses.
That's right.
And we need to feed them quickly before they shut down. Otherwise, if you feed them in winter, it's a waste of time.
So
what should people be doing right now? Is it too late? Actually, the nights have been getting cold. Have we missed it or is it still time?
There's still time. It is getting cooler, but we've still got a fair bit of warm weather around us. Even the next 7 days look pretty good. So these sorts of fertilisers don't need heaps of time to weave their magic in your lawn. So I'd focus on high potassium, high phosphorus fertilisers and ones that pack a reasonably good punch, because you not only want to give your lawn something now, you want to give it something to maintain itself through the winter, but then you also want to leave something in the tank for spring. And if your lawn is got a bit of energy in reserve, it'll actually come out of winter dormancy just a little bit better off than if you hadn't done that.
So that was, sorry, high potassium and high what, Stefan?
High potassium, high phosphorus. So high P, high K. So they give vigor, rigor as well. They just help the plant sustain itself, the lawn stand up to the extreme or cooler weather that it's going to get, which it doesn't appreciate. Like Sophie said, with the Cooches, Kikuyus and Buffaloes, they're lovers of the warm, but not so much the cold.
And we're not just talking about how your lawn looks. If your lawn is feeble over winter, that also gives weeds a chance to take hold, doesn't it?
So, you're dead right. Yep.
If your lawn is really vibrant, the weeds don't get so much of a look in.
Yep. So all that ability to withstand that sort of stuff is definitely increased when you look after your lawn in that way. And not only weeds, you've got disease issues and even moss and algae type of stuff. If your lawn is strong with a strong canopy that hasn't receded too much, you're really doing the most that you can to protect it from things that will come along and take opportunity where they can, like those things, like the weeds and the moss and disease. Yeah.
Now, there's another thing, and this is definitely a question for me, Steph, and I'm going to put it out there. My lawn is quite long at the moment, and it needs a weed, needs a mow, sorry. It doesn't need a weed yet, but it needs a mow. But in the past, because I've lived in quite cold, frosty areas, if I've mown too late and then it comes in cold, it hasn't responded. So it's knowing, you know, how you should mow it so that it doesn't, you know, if you cut all the green off and it doesn't regrow, you're left looking at that for winter.
Yeah, yeah. And I would say to anyone, biggest tip I can give you is right now, as far as mowing is concerned, is whatever height you're mowing your lawn at now, go outside this afternoon and raise it by one notch and don't go any lower. Because if you do actually scalp your lawn now, you run the risk of it not having enough time to regather up that green colour again. And so,
absolutely. Yeah,
you take the blades off the top and then that's it. And the grass doesn't care. Like, that's, it just goes, yeah, whatever. But the but aesthetically, it's just not going to put back what you just took off. So,
absolutely. I have done this several times. And so I'm very twitchy about that. So I think your advice to raise it by one notch is fantastic. Now, what other things do people need to be aware of with their lawns at the moment?
So that is, you've just touched on two of the big ones. And funnily enough, that maintenance one will almost pay as big a dividend as anything else. Like that not resisting any urge to cut it down, scalp it, do any sort of heavy maintenance, that's off the table. So forget about that. The other thing too is that it's a good time to have a think about your watering program on your lawn. If you're under a computer system that's running your system for you, then have a think about how you're going to reprogram that for winter, because the chances are it's not going to need anywhere near as much.
Does it need any over winter? You know, I mean, that's a really vague question, but, you know, surely once it starts to rain, you know, season breaks, whether that's end of April, whether that's end of May, whether it's in June, it starts to rain, can we not just forget about our lawns, or do they still need to be watered over winter?
Yeah, mostly yes, you can. And there are two reasons otherwise. If your lawn is new, like if you've planted it in the autumn as a turf, you'll need to pay some attention, because it's only going to have shallow root zone, and even if it's cold, it's still going to need some water to stay alive. So have a think about that. But secondly, if we get a super dry winter and the soil does dry right down, it can really slowly, but it can damage your lawn. So if we're having a dry spell, it doesn't hurt just to do a manual cycle on your lawn, or get your sprinkler out and just give it a bit of a water, and you can tell whether it needs it just with a core sample, see what the soil profile's like.
Oh, fantastic. So many things to think about. Now, one of the other lawn types I was about to mention actually is brought up in our next caller, so we might go to Colette in Clearview if we can.
Let's do that. Hello, Colette.
Morning, team.
Now, I was going to talk to Stefan about dichondra as a lawn. Now, it's not a turf as such. It's a creeping native ground cover that's fantastic for shaded areas, and you've got an issue with that right now.
Well, I don't have an issue with it. I planted it in a shady area, and it has beautifully a third of my lawn. It's great. No weeds in it. I highly recommend it from that point of view. It responds well for mowing, but what do I feed it with?
Yes,
because
great question.
I've got Sir Walter and a bit of kikuyu as well.
Yep. So what's out of all those grasses that you have in there, which one do you want to favour? Which one's your favourite? Which one do you want to stay there?
I want them all to stay here. I'm not one of those lawn people. I just like a bit of green because it's good environmentally.
Yep. So we'll focus on
the... I've got a lot of trees, but the dichondra probably does need food, I think.
Yes.
I don't know. It seems happy.
And focusing on that dichondra, because that's gonna be the basis on which you choose your fertilizer, because that one is a bit sensitive, and so you really should stick to organic fertilizers only for dichondra. The risk of burning dichondra is super high with mineral fertilizers, and if you do burn it, it can really knock it around to the point where it can knock it out. Stick to your organic ones, and even native organic ones are probably gold standard for dichondra.
Okay.
Low phosphorus, yeah.
Right. Well, that's interesting. Colette is a fantastic gardener. She really is an amazing gardener, so I know she'll take that on board. Rosemary from Kensington is on the line. Now, Rosemary, you've got a lawn question for Stefan Palm and Sophie Thompson.
Yes, thank you very much. Good morning, everyone. I rang Sophie a few months back now about this lawn. trying to find a better one to replace it because it died. And it wasn't the one I asked for. It was Sir Walter, which is highly recommended for many. But I really do need a finer leaf lawn that doesn't have itchy edges to the leaves. And also I've got to re-prepare the... It's only a pocket size lawn, 3 metres by 4 at the back of a unit. And I have to prepare for it and try and get a fine leaf lawn from somewhere.
Is it in shade or in sun?
Winter shade from the unit, but there's no trees hanging over it.
Okay. Would it get more than 5 hours a day of direct sun?
Yes, but not quite so much in midwinter. It gets okay. Direct sun for 3/4 of the year.
Yep. So your options are, if you want to steer away from the buffalo types of lawn, the wide blade types of grasses, and you want to go fine, you can only really choose between a couch variety, which will love the warmer, sunnier times of the year, but probably recede and look a bit ordinary when it's not getting the sun. So it'll have that kind of cyclic run, which you may or may not be okay with. The only alternative to that is into the fine turf type varieties like rye grasses. And so they'll give you the nice fine look. They'll give you a sun and shade ability to grow in either one of those. But they're very thirsty and they're not very hardy. So,
and they're not so good to either if you've got a dog or a dog that wheezes in them, are they?
They're not. No, that's, no. So this is
exactly
this is the tricky
what
thing.
We do have.
Yeah. Right. So
okay.
So Stefan, can I ask you? I didn't know that Sir Walter was prickly. I thought it was. You know, they call it soft leaf buffalo because it doesn't give you rashes.
It is. It's called soft leaf buffalo because compared to the old buffalo that it replaced, which a lot of people will remember from years gone by, was very hard and scratchy. And so compared to that, it's actually soft, and that's hence the comparison. It's soft compared to that. It's not as soft as a couch or kikuyu, but if it's really prickly, it's often it shouldn't be. It's actually not too bad as far as it doesn't have the spiny hairs that run down the outside of the blades anymore. And so if you're finding that your buffalo is prickly, it can actually be a reflection of that it's not happy. And that it has lost a bit of its leaves, blades, and needs some TLC. There may be an issue there that's actually causing it to be the way it is that can be resolved, and you might find that you're quite happy with it after that.
Thank you, Rosemary. I hope that goes well for you. Mark is in Albert Park. Mark, I'm sure you've got a question many people would like answered.
Yes, winter grass. Good morning. How are you? Thanks for the show. Winter grass. Last year, I've got a very nice lawn happening out in the front yard, couch, and battled away with winter grass last year. Failed. I did a pre-emergent. Then I used your winter grass killer, which failed. And I want to make sure I get on top of it now, I guess.
Yeah, it is getting late in the season. So when it comes to winter grass, you have a choice. You can either, what's called an annual bluegrass. So it is a grass itself, and a lot of people don't like it because it's different colour, different look to your existing grass. So you can actually persist with it, and it can form part of the natural cycle of your lawn. But it is prolific, and it does increase, and the seeding of it makes it get more and more dominant in your lawn. So if you want to control it, the best way to do it is pre-emergently. I know that you said that you've tried pre-emergent and failed, but it is actually a way of doing it that does work. So if you've had no success with it, it's probably a reflection of something that's gone wrong there rather than that.
I wondered, did I not water it in properly?
Possibly. There are conditions that you'll read on a label that need to be followed when you're doing that as far as timing goes. Now is any later than now, you probably missed the boat.
All right, I'll do it today.
And then repeating as you go every probably 12 weeks.
There you go. Saturday job sorted, Mark. Thank you very much. Stephan Palmer's our special guest. You are listening to Saturday Talkback Gardening with Sophie Thompson and me, Deb Tribe. Love your calls, but we haven't got Stephan for very much longer because it's a really, really busy Easter long weekend for him in other people's gardens. So we'll come back to him in just a moment. The phone line for General Talkback with Sophie is 1300 222 891.
Welcome to Talk Back Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson.
891
ABC Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Stephan Palm, turf consultant, is joining us this morning. Stephan, I've got so many texts. We'll do it speed dating style as usual.
Righto.
And Michael Two Dogs from Henley says, has anyone discovered a miracle cure to help lawn repair from dog urine? I have yellow patches everywhere.
Yeah, no. That comes down to turf selection and turf health. It's every lawn's going to burn when your dog pees on it because it's got blades and the dog urine's got urea, and urea sucks the moisture out of the blade, hence the burning. It's the ability for your grass to recover that separates one from another. So, super attention on the maintenance,
on
the nutrient.
Can I ask, Stephan, you know, I've heard of people doing, you know, yogurt, giving their dogs yogurt, and there's a stone you put in their water bowl. Do they work?
Yep. I have heard over 30 years, I've heard lots of mixed 50-50. People say, yeah, it's best thing ever. Someone says, could have gone down to the railway tracks and done better for nothing. So coming back to the science of the urea, like the more water your dog drinks, the less that's going to be. So that's a thing, but it's just down to that. You can hose it off if you see it, but of course you're not always following your dog around. The diet thing does play into it because it can affect how concentrated the urea component of the urine is. So that's where that's all coming from. So yes, it can help, but not necessarily. It's an ongoing thing that,
And okay. It makes no difference if you've got a boy dog or a girl dog or a... Not, or a breed.
Only in where they choose to go, you know.
Now, James asks, is it too late to lay turf?
No, not at all. Turf, coming back to the comment that Sophie made earlier, most people when they lay turf are going to put a Kuchar Kikuyu or a buffalo in, and yes, they are seasonal, and so they do have times of the year when they go quiet. But even then, in Adelaide's temperate climate, you could lay any one of those varieties on the coldest day of winter, and it won't root in. It'll sit there like a mat, and you could probably roll it up at the end of winter. But it won't die as long as you understand that you've got a grass down there that's just kind of aesthetically covering over a dirt or mud area. So you can't use it too much. You certainly can't expose it to the dogs. But if you have an area that you want to do through the winter, you can still do it. Thousands of people before you have successfully. The only proviso I'd give to that is if you're in a hills area that has a lot of frost, that can really knock it around. So aside from that, yes, with conditions.
Okay, thank you. And on this particular texter, it has got a wedding coming up in late October, but they're coming to the end of a house reno, which has ruined the lawn. They want to lay turf when the area is cleared, which is at least 6 weeks away.
Yep.
Question, do we wait as late as possible closer to spring to lay the turf or do it once the area is cleared?
It's a really interesting question as well because what happens, I would go as soon as possible. I mean, this is a very hard to answer question because it depends on the weather, but typically in the growing regions, as the deeper we get into winter, the more frost they get out there, which we don't get here in the metro. So the more frost they get in the growing areas, the more off the grass looks when you get it. And so if you can actually get it into your property, say May or June or that sort of timing and lay it out, you'll avoid that frosting on the farm and get a green grass through winter. But if you wait till June or July, the frosting on the farms may have already happened so that the grass that you get in will already have lost some colour and then you have to wait for spring to get it back. But even the period between when it comes back, mid-September through to October, you'll get a fair bit of recovery in that time, especially if you focus on like liquid fertilisers and making sure that you're up to speed on your watering and care.
Okay. We better move. We've got Eugene in Clarence Gardens with a quick question. Hi, Eugene.
Hi, guys. Thank you very much for my call. Look, a question is, I'm renting a property. What I've realised is there's normal couch on top, but underneath was burrs. and I've gone through and tried to pull out the burrs as best as I can once it's been watered. Now, I want to use a weed and fertilizer spray by a certain company. Would that be okay? Would that help the situation?
It'll do nothing for the burrs. Each one of those burrs has three seeds in it, and those seeds will germinate if they're viable seeds, and they probably are. So you can't prevent them. You can't prevent them with anything that you're talking about. You have to wait for them to grow and germinate before you can do that sort of thing. So, when you have burrs, they're protected by a husk, and the husk kind of protects the seed a bit too. So that's a bit of a tricky one.
So what, you have to wait for them to grow up?
Yes, you can still use pre-emergence because even when those seeds come out and try and grow, pre-emergence will knock them down. Yeah, if you've got a lot of them, they'll come up slowly in a staggered germination. You can pull them as you see them because it won't be all at once, especially if you've buried it underneath your turf and soil. Mm. If you do get it depends how you want to do it. Post-emergence, yes, you can have a go with what you're talking about. Pre-emergence is probably less toxic and better results.
Okay, good luck, Eugene. Sounds like a tricky one. Rick from Tanunda, what's your quick question for Stefan?
Yeah, good morning, guys. Thank you for taking this call. I heard you talking about dichondra before, and I'd forgotten all about it. I want to know where to buy it because I've got the perfect situation for it. Can I?
Yeah, it's a funny thing, isn't it? Because everyone that's heard of it loves it. Quick story. The irony is people that have it, that grows where it grows naturally, come to us and say, how do I get rid of this weed growing in my lawn? I don't want it. And people that want it can't find it. So it's this constant cycle of you just smile every time you hear it. Where to buy it? Generally, you can buy it in some garden centres in punnets in season. That's about it. Otherwise, seed. You can definitely seed it, but it is a warm season plant, so you do need to wait for spring for that one. But the most economical way is just buy seed and germinate it like you would any other seed.
Okay. Very quickly, Rebecca from Fullerton. Hello.
Hi, team. Stefan, can I use blood and bone to fertilise a kikuyu lawn, please?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a organic product. You're applying what's the benefits of doing those sort of things. It's a great product to use in your fertilizer program. Yeah. There are other organic fertilizers that will be more complete than that, that'll have more bio elements in them. But if you have some of that and you want to use it, absolutely.
Okay. And what would be a better one to go for what you were talking about before at the beginning, high potassium, high phosphorus?
And right now, high potassium, high phosphorus mineral fertilisers for lawns will do better than pure organic fertilisers have a lot of benefits, but they don't have high nutrient levels. And so when your task is to set up a lawn for winter, higher nutrient levels is better.
Okay.
As far as the lawn's concerned. So,
brilliant. Yeah. Well, Stefan Palm, I know how busy you are this Easter long weekend. So thanks so much for taking time out to join us and share your expertise this morning on Saturday Talkback Gardening.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Stefan Palm, turf consultant, the best in the biz. Speaking of the best in the biz, Sophie Thompson is here to take your calls. We'll come back to them very shortly. The number is 1-300-222-891.
Welcome to Talkback Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson.
891.
ABC Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
It is the Easter long weekend edition of Saturday Talkback Gardening. Hope that you're having a lovely Easter long weekend and have plenty of time to kick back and do some gardening. Sophie is here. Sophie, happy Easter to you. You'll be doing some gardening this weekend, which is fabulous for such a busy woman.
I will be gardening this weekend. Happy gardening to all our listeners. I mean, any time in the garden is always precious, but it seems great that we get a couple of days. So, some time for family, some time for friends, and some time for gardening.
Sounds fantastic. So if you would like to talk to Sophie right now, call in on 1-300-222-891. You'll get straight through to Sophie. I have a couple of ABC Gardening Australia magazines to give away a little bit later in the program as well. So call now to get to Sophie, just as Marlene from Pooindi has done. Good morning, Marlene.
Morning, Sophie and Deb. How are you?
Great.
Great, thank you. How's it like over on beautiful Eyre Peninsula?
Oh, it's actually beautiful weather over here at the moment. It's just lovely. But, yeah, rain would be good.
Absolutely. And how can we help you in the garden, Marlene?
I'd like to kill some cannas. I've shot them down. They're going to invade my whole garden if I don't do something about it. They're just terrible.
You know, I would say the easiest thing is to dig them up. I mean, and I'm easy in inverted commas. You know, so if you can, because they're actually, you know, they've got like the rhizome, they've got this fleshy rooted part. If you get a fork underneath them and flip all of them out, you'll actually get the bulk of them. You know, if you go using a herbicide or something, which I'm sure would affect them, you're still going to have to get that bulky plant base out of the area to replant. So I would actually say rather than putting out a whole lot of herbicide, you know, if you can – is there a young uni student that's on leave? You know, I mean, physically removing them is going to be the best. Or, you know, someone nearby with a tractor, you know, in a country area, often a neighbour can give you a bit of a hand. But I would actually be trying to get the bulk of them out of there.
Okay. And, oh, yeah, I thought that might have been the case. Thanks, Sophie.
Sorry.
Sophie, I think I just missed, but I've got two apple trees and a pear tree, so I can cut them back a third now. Is that right?
You can. You can. I mean, it's obviously no longer summer pruning. We're quite definitely in autumn. But if we're trying to reduce their vigour, up to 30% can come off. And basically, it's not a winter prune. You know, winter prune stimulates vigour and is what we do to get good shape and all that sort of thing. But, yes, you can still do the summer prune.
Yeah, because they're actually just – they're just full of leaves still, so I'll have to get stuck into them. That's another any more kids around the place?
Oh, come on, there's got to be someone there out that way.
Yeah, I'll have to try. Thank you so
much. Good on you, Marlene.
Yes, if in doubt, it's the pitchfork, Marlene. Sorry. Good luck. Kim from Manham is on the line with a French penny question. Hello, Kim.
Yeah, good morning. Long time listener, first time caller for good morning, Sophie.
Welcome, welcome.
Yes. Just on the farm out, Manham here. So when I get to my top paddock, I can probably see Sedan anyway. So
you probably can.
Yes. Now, frangipani, we've got two beautiful white ones at the front of our house facing north. Now, I'd like to spice it up a little bit, as one will say, and maybe see about grafting a different colour onto it. Is it possible?
So, Kim, it is possible, but can I say I don't know anyone that's ever done it in South Australia, but I do know they do it interstate. Now, you know, Sydney and North are the places where you see the most beautiful, lots of different, you know, varieties of frangipanis. Yes. A friend of mine's actually written a book on them and, you know, they're just magical and I know they do it. Now, my thing would be that I think you'll have to do some research on the web about, you know, how to do it. The most important thing is that you would only do it when the sap's starting to flow, which is, for a frangipani in our climate, is quite late.
Yes.
So it's going to be November, December. You know, it's got to be in warm weather. They actually suggest you don't plant them out. You know, people often go, I'll plant one in spring. Well, September, October is way too cold for them. But I would be looking at, you know, later in the year. So that gives you lots of time, you know, when between now and then to do all the research. But can I say it's great to hear frangipanis. I mean, I've put two in out here and I asked around if any local had one growing and people couldn't really find them. They have lots of them in pots, you know, where they can protect them if it's a frost. But it's great to hear yours are growing well.
Oh, yeah, they hug up against the house and it's got a staircase between them, like a nice concrete one. And, they really look nice during the summertime, and especially when they're flowering. It's absolutely wonderful. And the smell.
Oh, I bet. Oh. Yeah. Yes. It's something that is quite intoxicating and spectacular. So good luck with that, Kim. You'll have to let us know how you go.
No worries. Thank you very much.
Thanks, okay, Kim. Bye. Yep, now you've called in. Don't be a stranger. Call back okay. and give us an update. Thank you.
Okay.
1-300-222-891, the number to get through to Sophie Thompson this morning. Kathy is in Flagstaff Hill. Now, you have got a plant that I've never heard of before, Kathy. Tell us about it.
It's a, I think it's more of a pest, actually. It's called, it's the other name for it is Arisarum vulgare.
Yeah.
And it's, we've been in the house for just over 3 years and it started off as just a small amount of it, but it's just growing and it's starting to take over my garden bed. And I'm just wanting to try and see if I can get rid of it. It's got lots of little bulbs underneath.
Yeah,
and
it does.
I, at one stage I dug up the whole, like, basket full of bulbs, but it doesn't look like it's I've touched the surface really.
Yeah, so it is an it is a bulb, Kathy, and it dies right down to nothing over summer.
Yes, yeah,
and it's you know it's actually it can become weedy if it's in an area where you've got big trees and shrubs. You know, it'll just be existing on the bottom as a sort of understory and won't cause a problem. But if you're trying to grow other ground covers with it, people might know it because it has a sort of marbled leaf. Well, there are several forms. Some have marbled leaves, some don't. And I do know that the flowers are quite interesting. You know, they sometimes call it Jack in the Pulpit, or, you know, there's lots of names for it because they have these little striped flowers with a sort of brown hood and striped brown and cream throats.
Yes, that's right.
So, I mean, the reality is, if you've got precious plants in there amongst it, I would just keep on trying to dig them out. I don't know that you'll ever get rid of it. If it's a free area where you could get herbicide to it, you could try that on the fresh growth that's probably there. Well,
now,
is there fresh growth now? Yeah.
Yeah, it's looking very healthy.
Okay, so you could try and, you know, cut and paint or spray carefully with a herbicide. But if you've got any other plants in amongst it, you know, obviously they'll be very sensitive to the herbicide.
Yes.
So I think, you know, having a plan of attack, it does spread by vegetatively, which means that it sort of multiplies under the ground and the bulbs keep spreading.
Yes.
So if you've got something like a concrete path or something, I don't think it will jump that.
No.
But it will spread to the limits if it's not controlled. Mm.
Yeah, I want to try and control it because it seems to be it's just spreading. The only plants I've got around in that immediate area are a few liriopes and a couple of nandinas, but I'm happy to just dig them out for the time being.
Fantastic.
And just perhaps spray the Friar's Cow with a herbicide or something that might stop it. And I've got heaps of newspaper. If I sprayed it, could I put a layer of newspaper over it and then put some mulch on top of that?
I want you to wait till it's died first due to the herbicide before you do that.
Okay.
Because I think that it would have the capacity to push the newspaper up.
It's
got the vigour to do that. So you want to make sure it's dead before you sheet mulch. Now, when it comes to digging your liriope out and your nandina, I'm actually going to tell you, I want you to hose all the soil off, because you could have a tiny little bulb left in the root system and then you'll reintroduce it. So, you know, that's going to be a project, Kathy. Mm. Good luck with that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, all Kathy. Robert in Holden Hill has a Fajoa question. Hi, Robert.
How are you?
Well, thank you.
I've got a Fajoa tree that's got away from me and it's probably 14 feet high now.
Wow.
The birds have discovered it and I've got one piece of fruit off of it every morning. There's probably a bucket full of chewed up fajoas scattered all around the ground. Now I'm wondering if I can prune it very heavily, bring it down to a reasonable height, or will that kill the tree?
Fajoas are pretty tough, Robert, so I think you'll be fine. Can I just ask, though, if you prune it down to a reasonable height, does it have foliage below where you prune?
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. So, yeah. So the thing is, obviously, if you're cutting trunks that are, you know, reasonably substantial, they'll take a while to reshoot. But if it's got foliage down below that, it will be fine. I don't think I've ever seen one as big as what you're describing, but I have seen them, you know, 3 meters plus. Yeah, so certainly get them down. I love feijoas. Feijoas are one of those fruit, you either love them or hate them. And I have the most amazing recipe for a feijoa cake that tastes like a sort of a caramelly sticky date pudding. So I've planted them out here but can't wait till they start fruiting.
Okay, yeah. But what's actually happened, I haven't been able to keep it down low. And this year, I used to get as much as 60 kilograms of
feijoa. Wow.
But now it's got too high and the birds have just...
Yeah.
And I've not got one fruit this year.
Oh, well, good luck. I'd be, you know, they are really tough evergreens. I would be giving it a prune now. If it was a subtropical, we might say you wait till springtime. But look, I reckon... give it a good prune now and you'll be fine.
Fingers crossed, Robert.
Okay.
Thank you. We haven't given our magazines away.
Oh.
Let's do that. We've got a couple of ABC Gardening Australia magazines to give away, one by phone on 1300 222 891, one by text on 0467 922 891. And if you are texting through, please put your full name and postal address. Coming up to Susan, Kim, and more of your calls in just a moment.
You're with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson. Talk Back Gardening.
891.
ABC Adelaide, South Australia, and Broken Hill.
Agave is a question on Susan's mind in Angaston. Hello, Susan.
Hello, how are you today?
Well,
my question is, how on earth do I get rid of them?
Is this the prickly ones?
No, they're not the prickly ones, just the...
Okay, so the ones that have the lovely big rosettes. Can I say, if you're wanting to get rid of them, I think you should simply cut them and either put them up on Marketplace or, you know, on a notice board somewhere that you want to get rid of them, and people will be delighted to take them. They do need a frost-free position, but, you know, just cutting the heads off and... they are highly desirable. If you have the prickly ones...
Really?
They are. So if you have the prickly ones, you know, they are the agave Americana. No one wants those. I've got them all over my property, and in the end I've had to get, you know, an excavator in to get them because they're so vicious and they have such a strong root system, and we've had to dig them up and we've... actually put them on the bonfire to try and, you know, they're shocking things. But if they're the Rosetti ones, they are desirable. We're not talking about yuccas. We are talking about agaves.
No, the agaves.
Agave, yes,
I've got thousands of them, and they send up pups all over the place.
Yep.
I've got heaps of them.
Okay.
And
so
I take them. I'd gladly give them to them.
Well, I am sure. Or the other thing is the little pups – you know, if you give them to charity shops or, little op shops that are raising money for community. So, for example, in Canberra, we have a gorgeous little op shop, you know. So if they're the ones with the pups, I will say that the agave you have, which is attenuata, doesn't like frost. If you have frost on it, it goes snotty, like it melts. In the Barossa, some people may not succeed with it if they're in a really cold, frosty area. But if people are up on top of a hill or something, they're amazing. So I would certainly, I'd be looking to gift them on to someone who desires them.
Okay, well, that's an easy solution rather than digging them up. Thank
yeah,
you
win,
so
win.
Much for your help.
All the best with that, Susan.
Thanks, Susan. Good to hear from you. And thank you to Greenock Joe that says, we make feijoa jelly and sell it at the cellar door. There were less feijoas this year due to the wet, cool November.
Okay, and feijoas are one of those interesting plants that are bird pollinated. So unfortunately, they'll also love eating them, as we heard, but yes, they are bird pollinated.
Interesting. We love them, but we need them. So it's very, very important. Kim's in Waipinga. And Kim, you're after a particular sort of onion. Good morning.
Hello. Yeah, I'm trying to find out where I can obtain Mum calls them bunching onions. They're sort of like shallots, I guess. Yeah, you grow them by division. They're small onions, not your spring onions. They have bulbs.
Yeah, absolutely. So there are a couple of things that sometimes get called bunching onions. There's Welsh onions and potato onions and all sort. And I grew one called the Egyptian walking onion, which forms a clump of shallot-sized bulbs and then has the reason it's called a walking onion is it puts up a flower spike, and then after the flower it forms these little bulbules, and the weight of the bulbules pulls the flower down, and so that's how it walks around your garden. But I'm going to send you on to the Diggers Club because they have a number of these sort of unusual onions, and they are all amazing. And so they'll be able to help you with that. They may also have seed of them, whereas some you actually plant as sort of bulbules, others plant from seed.
Yeah, well, these are bulbs, sort of each year we just keep some and re-divide them, plant them. But, unfortunately, they all rotted over summer. They got a bit too hot, so we've lost them all.
Okay.
We're trying to find how do I get some to restart up, Mum's.
Well, I tell you what I'd do, Kim. So, do try the Diggers Club, but also not far from you, you've got some amazing garden clubs like the Wollunga Garden Club. It may well be that someone in a garden club actually has some and can share it back with you.
No worries.
Okay. Yeah, hope you find that what you're looking for there, Kim. Sounds very interesting and delicious. Mary in Redwood Park has won a magazine, as has Carol in Moonta. And thank you to Shah, who sent through a text saying, loving listening with a warm cuppa as it's windy and cold here in Kingscote this morning. Wanted to say thank you for my Organic Gardener magazine from last week. By complete coincidence, it arrived on my birthday. Such a treat. Have a wonderful Easter weekend, Shah. We wish you and everyone that's listening a wonderful Easter weekend as well. Rob is in Norwood with a mulch question. Hi, Rob.
G'day. Actually, down at Middleton. So just spent the last couple of days planting leucodendrons, banksias and proteas in sort of quite sandy soil. What's the best type of mulch to use, please?
A woody mulch. And so because banksias are natives, leucodendrons and proteas are South African, but all of them would prefer a woody mulch. So as a general rule of thumb, woody mulch, so, bark-based mulch, whether we call it the council mulch or whatever you can get, is best for woody plants. And I wouldn't do, I would just go to the local sand and metal yard and get a load of their coarser mulch. Now, the coarser you get, theoretically, the heavier too, so then it will sit there longer. If you get a really fine mulch, it'll break down quicker, whereas I'd be looking for a coarse mulch, just put it on, set and forget. And it should last you for a couple of years.
All right, cool. Thank you.
Easy.
Easy peasy.
Happy Easter. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rob.
And same to you, Rob. That's lovely to hear from you. On the text line, Mary of the Barossa says, saw Sophie's segment on wicking beds last night. Fantastic, but overwhelming for mere mortals like me. She is awesome in what she's doing. So enjoying that. Also on wicking beds.
Can I just add to that you can buy wicking beds and you can buy wicking pots. And they're... there's commercial ones available in big sheds. There's a company that just specialises in that in the Adelaide Hills. So my version of doing it is purely to save money, okay?
Okay.
So because I have now I have near 30 of them and, there's got to be a DIY version that's more affordable.
Okay, all right. Also on the text line and in relation to the same thing, Jim from Onker Hill says, Sophie was doing liquid beds last night on Gardening Australia with exclamation marks. And Kay in Auburn says, I'd like to increase our wicking beds, looking for more IBCS. I don't know what that is.
IBCs. Okay, so IBCs,
food grade. Yeah.
Yeah. So IBC is an acronym that stands for Intermediate Bulk Container, and it's the universal 1,000-litre square tank that we see moving on drums around areas with wineries, you know, anywhere where there is wineries, they use them. Anywhere where there's food production, they use them. You know, whether it's, you know, molasses or canola oil or anything like that. And the reason I always say it has to be food grade is because otherwise, you know, if you've had one that's had a nasty chemical like glyphosate in it, it will taint the plastic. So I only ever use food grade. So if she just simply looks around, you know, areas where there's food production. So north of Adelaide, there are businesses that sell them, marketed as food grade. Or if you get on secondhand sites, you'll often find some that have already been cut that are say aquaponics. And if you're quick, you can pick them up really cheaply.
Okay, and speaking of advertising things for free, Natalie says, we relieved our garden of hundreds of agave by advertising them for free on Marketplace, receiver to remove. Done.
Awesome.
Job done.
Awesome.
Jordan at Golden Grove says, happy Easter to everybody. And just this last week, I planted my new winter crops. Can't wait for it all. And has sent through a lovely photo. Well done. We can quickly squeeze John from Tanunda in. Hello, John.
Oh, good morning. I've got some Scarborough lilies here. They came from my wife's family. The bulbs have been in the family for over 100 years. And I transplanted them, thinned them out last year, put them into different pots because they had grey mould. Now, I sprayed them with fungus gun first and then later on Mangazeb, but doesn't seem to have cleaned up the grey mould. But one of the groups I washed the bulbs off, sprayed them while they were out of the ground with the Mangazeb, and they seem to have shook the grey mould. But what's the best thing to do?
Okay, can I just say, if it's Scarborough lily, now this is unfortunately where common names often apply to several things. Scarborough lily is Velotta, which is a hardy bulb from South Africa. I don't think they have mould. I think they have mealybug. So is it down at the bottom where the leaves come out of the leaves pair up and come out of the soil?
It is.
Okay, so you've got mealybug, which is why none of the fungus treatments worked. So get hold of some neem oil, NWM, make it into a solution in a bucket, and I would be washing the bulbs if you can, knocking all the soil off because mealybug does go down into the ground. Velotta lilies are really hardy. They've been in your wife's family forever. They'll be in your family forever. But if they've got mealybug, it just means at some point they dried out in their pots and mealybug gets a hold. So treat it with neem and you're looking at mealybug. And so treat that. Don't use a fungicide.
Good luck with that job, John. Keep them in the family. Keep them going. Sophie Thompson, I'm so pleased that you have some gardening time yourself this Easter long weekend. Thank you for joining us on the Easter edition. You'll be back tomorrow with Jason. So have yourself a wonderful Easter long weekend.
I certainly will. And same to you, Deb, and happy gardening to all our listeners.